Hi, it's your host, Shannon Ballard. I hope you and your family are well and practicing social distancing. For anyone listening who has been directly affected by the coronavirus pandemic, my heart goes out to you and those you love. This week, you will be hearing an episode from the Southern Mysteries Archives. I had other plans for the show when I mapped out the episodes for 2020, but the content just didn't feel right this week. Hope, strength, and navigating impossible circumstances seemed fitting, especially considering this week marks the birthday of a man whose life exemplified all of those things and more. Stay well, friends, and enjoy a look back at the incredible life of Robert Smalls. On May 13, 1862, an enslaved crew member of a Confederate steamship stole the ship and sailed it past Confederate forces to deliver it to Union forces. This outlaw to the Confederacy became a hero of the Union, a symbol of hope and freedom to the enslaved people of the American South. This is one of the most important stories of the Civil War. This is the legendary story of Robert Smalls, a man who set sail to freedom. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight. And I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine. All right. All right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. Robert Smalls is an American hero you need to know. But Robert Smalls is an American hero who is relatively unknown. He was a war hero, a political leader who helped lay the groundwork for the civil rights movement. And the fact that he accomplished all of this in his lifetime is an example of a man overcoming obstacles and adversity to create a better life for himself, his family, and his fellow Americans. Robert Smalls was born into slavery, but he promised himself he would be a free man, that his family would be free. And as you'll learn, when Robert Smalls committed to a cause, believed in something, and his ability to make it happen, he never backed down. Robert Smalls was born on April 5, 1839. Smalls was born into slavery in the house of Admiral Henry McKee in Beaufort, South Carolina. Robert Smalls' mother, Lydia Polite, taught her son priceless lessons of self-worth and dignity, even as they served their master. And their master did honor one request from Lydia Polite. She expressed her hope that her son would not be sent to work in the fields of McKee's plantation. Their master agreed, and in 1851, at the age of 12, Robert was sent to live with his master's sister-in-law in Charleston, South Carolina. In the city, he was hired out to work under what was known as the hiring system. This was common in urban slavery. A slave would be hired out as a slave to others in the city, which meant their master would receive double the profit from the slave's labor. Robert Smalls did say later in life that the work experience he gained in Charleston helped him later in life. In fact, the move from the low country of Beaufort to the city life of Charleston was said to be a transformative experience that shaped Robert Smalls' life. With a population of almost 43,000 in 1850, Charleston, at the time, was really the big city. And in the big city, Robert learned new skills, working on the waterfront. And he also met people he wouldn't have met in Beaufort. He met people who would tell him of ways he could pay for his freedom, even escape to freedom, which gave Robert Smalls hope for his future. By the time he was 15 years old, Robert Smalls was earning $15 a month, and it all belonged to his master McKee. But Robert Smalls had a keen understanding of business, and he negotiated a deal with his master to be allowed to keep $1 a month. He would use that $1 to purchase candy and tobacco that he would sell on the docks. Any profit he earned, he saved. He knew that saving money would be a smart way to plan for his future. In 1856, 17-year-old Robert Smalls met and married a fellow slave, Hannah Jones. By 1858, they welcomed their first child, Elizabeth Lydia. Then Robert Smalls did something unheard of at this time. He negotiated an arrangement to purchase his wife and child from her master. An enslaved man buying an enslaved woman and child seemed like an impossibility at the time, but Robert Smalls knew that as a slave, his wife could be bought. And by now, he had saved $900. He used $800 of that money to purchase his wife and child. With $100 to his name, Robert Smalls knew his plan to pay for his family's escape to the North would have to wait, or he would have to come up with a new plan. Robert Smalls continued to work hard and eventually transitioned from working on the docks to working on a ship. He became a sailor working on a steamer in Charleston Harbor. By late 1860 and early 1861, South Carolina and other southern states had withdrawn from the Union and formed a new nation called the Confederate States of America. President Abraham Lincoln made it clear to the southern states that they did not have the right to secede. He refused to accept the South's demands to remove U.S. soldiers from South Carolina. Those soldiers defended a base in Charleston Harbor called Fort Sumter. And it was Fort Sumter that Confederate leaders attacked on April 12, 1861, the day the first shot was fired in the American Civil War. Shortly after the war began, President Lincoln declared a blockade of the southern coast, including Charleston Harbor, to stop the import of military goods from Europe and to prevent export of cotton to Europe. Union warships were positioned off the harbor to enforce this blockade and prevent the South's maritime trade. In July of 1861, Robert Smalls took work as a deckhand on the Confederate steamboat called the Planter. The steamboat was owned by John Ferguson, who would charter the steamer to the Confederacy as a dispatch and survey boat. Now, during the course of his work on the Planter, Robert Smalls learned valuable lessons, including navigation, navigating through the shallow creeks and rivers of coastal South Carolina. He became the wheel man of the Planter. Technically, he held the skills of a ship's pilot, but black men weren't allowed to be pilots before and during the Civil War. This meant that Smalls would serve as second in command, transmitting the captain's orders to the crew. On May 12, 1862, the Planter had been on a mission, but returned to Charleston Harbor to load a planned delivery of weaponry that would be transported to Fort Ripley the next morning. But that mission would never be carried out. While docked in Charleston Harbor, the white crew members left the steamer to attend a ball in the city. Smalls had observed that when these crew members left the boat, time and time again, they would not return until the next day. Robert Smalls knew if he could get to the Union blockade outside of Charleston Harbor, he could gain the freedom he had been dreaming of his entire life. Weeks later, Robert Smalls would agree to an interview to be published in Harper's Weekly. He told the story of how he and his fellow enslaved crew members planned their daring mission. When Robert started his job on the Planter, he had come up with the idea of running the vessel to sea. It had been a joke with a fellow enslaved friend, and they had agreed to not joke about it within earshot of any of the white crew members. But Robert Smalls did ask if anyone wanted to discuss this in earnest, and a few of the men agreed to meet at the home of Robert Smalls to, as Smalls described it, devise and determine upon a plan to place themselves under the protection of the Stars and Stripes instead of the Stars and Bars. They plotted and planned different options, unique ways to make this a reality, but in the end, they agreed that Robert Smalls would be the one to finalize the plan. The men told Robert that they trusted him and they promised to obey him, follow his orders at a moment's notice, to help carry out whatever plan he decided to enact. May 13th, 1862. This was the day Robert Smalls knew it was go time. While the white crew members were off the ship for the night, Robert Smalls and eight fellow black crewmen set into motion the mission Robert planned to complete, their mission to freedom. Early that morning, under the cover of darkness, Robert Smalls directed the crew to steam to Charleston's North Atlantic Wharf. There, Smalls' wife and children boarded the steamer along with relatives of some of his fellow enslaved crew members. In all, 17 enslaved African Americans would be on board, 9 men, including Robert, 5 women, and 3 children. His wife, Hannah, brought along a white sheet that would serve as a white flag of truce. And Robert and the crew carried out one final task on the ship. Robert and his wife knew that if the mission failed, they would surely be tortured and murdered by the Confederacy. So Robert and Hannah agreed to line the hull of the boat with dynamite. If the plan didn't work, they would blow up the ship and die together as a family on their own terms, not at the hands of the very people who were fighting to prevent their freedom. And with that, their mission began. With a Confederate flag flying over the CSS Planter, they steamed out into the harbor just as dawn was approaching. The plan meant that the Planter would have to steer the ship past 5 forts that required checkpoints. To say this was dangerous would be an understatement. Robert Smalls wore the captain's straw hat and turned his back to the Confederate forts as the steamer blew the steam whistle and approached Confederate checkpoints. The crew responded with the proper coded signals at the checkpoints, including at Fort Sumter and other defense positions. Robert Smalls was able to pass because the crew gave the proper signals, and the soldiers at the forts believed the Planter was simply heading out early to deliver the weaponry that they were scheduled to deliver to Fort Ripley that day. As the Planter passed by Fort Sumter, the crew waited until the last moment and then veered in the direction that no Confederate ship would go. They headed directly for the Union blockade. And at that moment, just as the Planter was out of range of the Confederate forces, those forces realized they had been duped. And by then, it was too late. Robert Smalls and his crew were sailing to freedom. Smalls directed the steamer with its cargo to the Union warship off Charleston Harbor, the USS Onward. The commander of the Onward wrote of what he saw that day, sharing that he immediately ordered his crew to prepare for battle against the approaching Confederate steamer. But as the steamer rapidly approached the Onward, the commander saw that the ship was not flying a Confederate flag. It was flying a white flag, the white sheet Hannah Smalls had brought on board as their symbol of truce. The steamer ran alongside the Onward, and the commander immediately boarded the Planter and hauled down the flag of truce and hoisted the American flag. The commander of the Onward would say that it was in that moment that he comprehended what had happened, what Robert Smalls and his crew had done. They had sailed past Confederate forts in the harbor and escaped, and they were surrendering the USS Planter to the Union, complete with its valuable cargo of heavy guns. But Robert Smalls carried with him something that was of greater value to Union forces, detailed knowledge of Confederate military plans. He shared the location of navigational channels and revealed where lethal mines were planted that could sink U.S. ships. The commander of the South Atlantic Blockading Squadron of the U.S. Navy, Admiral Samuel DuPont, referred to Robert Smalls' actions on May 13, 1862, as one of the most gallant naval acts of the Civil War. Southern newspapers would report what happened that day, with no mention of the enslaved African Americans sailing to freedom. But Northern newspapers, like the New York Times, referred to Robert Smalls as the hero of the Planter. The New York Herald called the escape one of the most daring and heroic adventures since the war commenced. And Robert Smalls was rewarded for his courageous act. Congress awarded Smalls and his crew half of the assessed value of the ship, about $4,500. Smalls' share was $1,500. Smalls was hailed as a hero and set out on a speaking tour to tell the story of what he and his crew had done in order to help raise support for the Union. Robert Smalls was also granted an audience with President Abraham Lincoln. Smalls sat at a conference table next to Frederick Douglass and Secretary of War Stanton. And Robert Smalls spent most of the time he had been granted with the president asking that the president honor his request and allow black men to fight for Union forces in the Civil War. It would take some time, but that request would be granted. Together, it's estimated that Robert Smalls and Frederick Douglass helped recruit nearly 5,000 black men for the Union Army. Robert Smalls could have remained in the North, living a comfortable life as a war hero. But he wanted the very thing he had asked of President Lincoln. He wanted to see action, and he wanted to serve his country. So Robert Smalls made the decision to return to war. In October of 1862, Robert returned to the place of his birth, Beaufort, South Carolina. He learned that his former master's house was for sale for back taxes, and Robert Smalls used part of the money he had received from the government to purchase that property. Admiral DuPont then employed Robert Smalls as pilot on board the Planter, the very ship that Robert Smalls and his crew had stolen from the Confederacy and delivered to the Union, was piloted by the former slave who was now a free man. According to naval records, Robert Smalls would be engaged in 17 military actions and was valiant in each engagement. For his courage, Smalls was promoted to the rank of captain. Robert Smalls would be one of the highest paid black soldiers during the Civil War. And it was only fitting that when the war ended in April 1865, Robert Smalls was on board the Planter in a ceremony in Charleston Harbor. When the war ended, Robert Smalls entered the next phase of his life, politics. He became involved in local politics because he was concerned about education for the black community in Beaufort. He founded the Beaufort Republican Club, which would be a launching pad for nominating blacks to office. The Republican Party platform of the 19th century was about racial tolerance, free enterprise, and political equality for African Americans. Robert Smalls would hold office again and again. He was elected to the South Carolina House of Representatives and later to the South Carolina Senate. He was elected to the United States House of Representatives twice, and he also served in Congress. While in office, Robert Smalls fought to protect the civil rights of black Americans and authored legislation that was near and dear to his heart, creating the first free and compulsory public school system in America in his home state of South Carolina. Smalls founded the Republican Party of South Carolina and was one of the first black Americans to serve in the U.S. Congress. He famously described the Republican Party of this era as the party of Lincoln, which unshackled the necks of 4 million human beings. Robert Smalls' commitment to racial equality was inspirational to some in the North, but in his home state of South Carolina, Robert Smalls' impassioned fight for racial equality made him a target of red shirt militias. These militias were formed by the white supremacist Ku Klux Klan, and they worked to deter black candidates like Smalls and to intimidate black voters. In 1876, former Confederate General Matthew Butler led a group of red shirts who attempted to intimidate voters at a rally for Robert Smalls. There, Butler publicly threatened Robert Smalls' life. But those red shirts underestimated Robert Smalls. The man who had risked everything to sail to freedom wasn't giving in to the threats of Butler or any of the red shirts. And that led Butler and all men who viewed Robert Smalls as a threat to pursue other options to try to bring him down. In 1877, Robert Smalls was preparing to fulfill his second term in Congress when his service was derailed by accusations of bribery. Members of the opposing party who controlled the state charged him with having taken a bribe years before while he was a state senator. During the 1876 election, Smalls' Democratic opponent was George Tillman, who was from a prominent Democratic family. The Democratic Party of the 1800s had supported slavery and found large support among the wealthy and the working class. They also found support and even worked with white supremacist groups to intimidate black voters and black candidates. The New York Times wrote the following about Robert Small's opponent, George Tillman. He is a Democratic tiger, violent in his treatment of Republicans, incendiary in his language, and advising all sorts of illegal measures to restrain Republicans from voting. Robert Smalls had called out George Tillman on the campaign trail and referred to him as the arch enemy of his race. Despite Tillman's best efforts on the campaign trail and the red shirt militia efforts to keep black voters from the polls, Robert Smalls defeated Tillman with 52% of the vote. But in July of 1877, the Democratic South Carolina state government charged Robert Smalls with accepting a $5,000 bribe while chairing a committee in the state Senate. Smalls' case went to trial in October of 1877, and by November, he would be convicted and sentenced to 3 years in prison. After spending 3 days in jail, he was released on bail while he waited for his appeal hearing with the state Supreme Court. Outside of the South, it was clear what was happening in South Carolina. Newspaper headlines reflected this, with a New York Times headline about the case reading, "Robert Small's trial, a sample of Southern justice, convicted on the unsupported testimony of a confessed criminal." In the years to come, it became clear that Robert Smalls had been set up by Tillman. By 1879, Robert Smalls was pardoned by the Democratic governor of South Carolina. And Robert Smalls' constituents made their feeling about the charges against him very clear. They elected him to 3 more terms in Congress. In 1895, another Tillman was preparing to do all he could to rob black Americans of the right to vote or hold office. This time, it was the brother of George Tillman, Ben Pitchfork Tillman. He had served as governor of South Carolina and in 1895 was a senator when he called for a state constitutional convention to change the state's constitution and strip black Americans of all voting rights. Senator Tillman's feelings toward black Americans is clear in this statement about black people voting in South Carolina, with Tillman saying, "The Negro must remain subordinate or be exterminated. We have done our level best to prevent blacks from voting. We have scratched our heads to find out how we could eliminate the last of them. We stuffed ballot boxes. We shot them. We are not ashamed of it." Robert Small's final public act of his political career would be to take a stand for the voting rights of black Americans when he served as a delegate at the convention. On September 10th, 1895, the South Carolina Constitutional Convention convened in Columbia, South Carolina, the state capital. Over the next 3 months, many changes were made to the state constitution, but the most significant changes centered on the right to vote. Under the new draft of the constitution, anyone who wanted to vote in South Carolina would be required to own at least $300 worth of property, would have to pass a literacy test, and would have to pay a poll tax 6 months before elections. These new voting regulations essentially disenfranchised the entire African-American population in the state of South Carolina. And the Constitution also held new guidelines for schools and for marriage. The convention established segregated schools and banned interracial marriages. Robert Smalls and his 5 fellow black delegates took a stand. They refused to sign this new constitution. When opposing delegates warned that anyone not signing would be denied money for travel expenses to the convention, Robert Smalls stood and said he preferred walking the 130 miles home to Beaufort over signing that document. Ben Pitchfork Tillman responded to Robert Smalls' passionate defense of the right of black Americans to vote by attacking and belittling Smalls during the convention. Robert Smalls made his position very clear when he responded to Tillman, declaring, "I stand here the equal of any man. I fought in 17 battles to make glorious and perpetuate the flag that some of you trampled under your feet, and no act of yours can in any way blur the record that I have made at home and abroad. Remember, the flag Smalls referred to was the American flag, the flag Confederates did trample on when they seceded from the Union, the flag Smalls had fought for the right to defend as a black soldier in the Civil War. Despite Robert Smalls' impassioned plea for the rights of black voters, a new South Carolina constitution was ratified on December 4th of that year, and the effect on African American voting rights was profound. Voting rights for black Americans in South Carolina would not be restored until 1965. On May 13th, 1862, Robert Smalls bravely dared to set sail to freedom, and he spent the remainder of his life fighting for the rights of the people he served in South Carolina and for the rights of black Americans, rights of freedom in all areas of life. His journey to freedom had taught him so much, brought him opportunities that he had only dreamed of as a young enslaved boy in Beaufort, South Carolina. You can only imagine that a history of enslavement would make you bitter, especially towards those who thought they could own a soul as bold and free as Robert Smalls. Remember, Robert Smalls had purchased his former master's home in 1862. Soon after the home had been purchased, the wife of his former master returned to the home and entered. You see, her husband had died. She was alone, mentally ill, and she thought she was returning to her house. But Robert Smalls and his family did the unexpected. They took her in. They welcomed her. Robert Smalls and his wife even moved out of their master bedroom so she could live in the room she had lived in while her husband was alive. Robert and his family cared for and supported her until the day she died. This level of compassion and kindness shows how truly free Robert Smalls was. When Robert Smalls died in 1915, he was buried in his family's plot at the Tabernacle Baptist Churchyard in Beaufort. A nearby monument to Smalls was inscribed with a powerful statement, a statement Robert made during the South Carolina Constitutional Convention of 1895. During the convention, when Robert Smalls stood against the delegates that would strip black Americans of the right to vote, Ben Pitchfork Tillman demanded that Robert Smalls offer any explanation as to why any black man deserved the right to vote. Robert Smalls boldly replied, "My race needs no special defense, for the past history of them in this country proves them to be the equal of any people anywhere. All they need is an equal chance in the battle of life." Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. There is so much more to learn about Robert Smalls. You can read more about him and watch a TED Talk about his life that was presented by his great-great-grandson, Michael Moore, at southernmysteries.com. Or you can find links in the show notes in your player. If you're enjoying Southern Mysteries, this is an independent podcast, and I would love your support. And it can come in a few ways. First, you can subscribe so you always know when there's a new episode of this show. And leave a review in your player so people know to follow your lead and check out Southern Mysteries. Second, become a member of the show on Patreon. There are a few membership options, including support at the Lanyap level, which means you get a little something extra. Bonus content each month as a thanks for your ongoing support of this independent podcast. You can learn about membership at patreon.com/southernmysteries. You'll find that link in the show notes where you're listening now. And to anyone who has left a review or shared about the show on social media, I appreciate your help in spreading the word about Southern Mysteries. Thanks for listening.